Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I want to talk once more about the intellectual origins of fascism, and we're going to talk about Friedrich Nietzsche today. Friedrich Nietzsche is a hugely misunderstood, overquoted, complex and hard to grasp, hard to kind of really pin down intellectual figure. And I'm going to be explicit here in that I am no philosopher, I am no Nietzsche scholar. My understanding of him really is his relationship to the intellectual roots of fascism. If you're looking for a wider understanding of Nietzschean thought in general, there are probably better people than me who can help you through that. There are innumerable great Nietzsche scholars out there, certainly who broadcast on YouTube particularly. Once again, we're looking at Roger Eatwell's brilliant Fascism, A History. And Roger Eatwell describes the importance of Nietzsche, whose writings, mainly in the latter part of the 19th century, seemed to encapsulate many of the kind of the anxieties that pre-fascist thinkers seemed to be articulating. Roger Eatwell writes of Nietzsche: "There's no doubt that Nietzsche's writings are elusive, often dealing in metaphors like sickness and health, or in irony rather than clear arguments. They were also written in a radical style, synthesising literature and philosophy, the abstract and the concrete. Three sets of argument, however, were central to Nietzsche's credo. First, anticipating Freud, was the appreciation of the irrational, unconscious side of human nature." Now, when you look at figures such as Hitler, Hitler in his writings was keenly aware that the rational part of human thought was often really quite minimal in the minds of the people he believed he spoke to. He was famous for saying, you know, try not to speak to an individual's intellect, instead talk to their feelings, those powerful passions within individuals. That's where you'll really get your reaction from. That's where you'll get what you want from them. And Freud, emerging at around the same time, slightly later, who identified the unconscious and identified that there was a deep and unspoken set of barely recognised drives that people were fueled by the hid the ego and the superego and the conflict between them that led people to behave in ways that often they didn't understand, and that only psychoanalysis could bring these drives and these desires to light so people could understand themselves. Nietzsche was far more certain that this irrational side of human nature was a challenge to the Enlightenment conception of the individual, the idea that the individual was rational and could reach ever greater levels of civility and civilization. Nietzsche has a much more negative view of individuals. Perhaps you might argue a more realistic, but certainly in the one of the ways in which this informs fascism is the centrality of conflict to fascism. Both Hitler and Mussolini and other key fascist agitators believed that war and struggle and conflict and bloodshed were natural and normal parts of the human condition and should be encouraged, and that by preventing these aspects of the human condition, that the civilization, the West particularly, had atrophied. There's a whole bunch of stuff I've done on this podcast when talking about Hitler's view of society, and that society had atrophied, and there was this kind of degree of social ballast, as he put it, the riffraff, the scum that hadn't been that would normally, in normal running of things, be killed off in a healthy society, were now there, dragging everybody else down, and the kind of the fat had to be cut from the lean meat. This was his view. This brings us to the second part of Nietzsche's thinking. Roger Eatwell writes, "Next, Nietzsche was fearful for the future of the West, which he believed was lapsing into decadence and irretrievable decline. He related this back to Christianity, which he would term a slave religion, and its later secular forms, humanism and socialism. These, he believed, encouraged a false sense of universalism, tending to promote pity for the weak rather than respect for the strong." And again, one of the key arguments, one of the key reasons why Hitler despised socialism is he viewed it as, he tied it with anti-Semitic thinking. He believed this was kind of a clever Jewish trick to encourage Western societies to weaken themselves, that the poor, the needy, the sick, the disabled, the infirm would be kept around by socialism and would lead to the rot of societies. Nietzsche argued that the original problem was Christianity itself, that Christianity, the Gospels of the New Testament, and their focus on compassion, on turning the other cheek, on the concern for the poor, the needy, the wretched, had really destroyed Western society. And instead of focusing on the weak, the worship of strength was really the creed that would see the rejuvenation of the West. This is certainly in Hitler's thinking. Hitler's entire aesthetic, if you look at the architecture, the sculpture of Arno Breker, for example, the famous sculpture Readiness, of the naked Aryan man holding a sword, his features kind of hard, cold, and merciless. It's a celebration of Aryan male power and violence, and implied violence, cruelty and mercilessness, and the idea that really mercy, sympathy, and solidarity and compassion are terrible weaknesses. The final theme was the idea of the Superman. In 1883, or 1885, I beg your pardon, he published his most famous book, Thus Spoke Zarathustra. Here, he argued that the main lesson of history was that in exceptional times, the man of destiny would use his will to rise above the herd of ordinary men. Nietzsche, therefore, eulogised the great leader, the Superman, who would overcome nihilism and recreate a more spiritual community, the man who would turn politics into aesthetics. In the late 19th century, a key debate amongst kind of romantics and proto-fascists was what would become of Western society in an age of mass democracy, mass labour movements and socialism. And the fear was that the individual, which was kind of a key part of romantic thought, the pioneering, self-directed individual, would be lost to the masses. There wouldn't be individuals anymore. There would just be a sea of peoples who, instead of being in the position that they would have been during the Middle Ages, medieval serfs, peasants, they all now had part of the process of decision making, and individual spirit and vigour and strength would be gone. Not a very well articulated argument, but one nonetheless. And the answer that these sort of proto-fascists came up with is that there would be one individual, and there would only be one important individual, and that would be the charismatic leader, the great figure who would step to the front and lead the masses in times of crisis. And this, of course, this idea of the leader or the Führer was not a new idea when Hitler articulated it. It had been mentioned on the fringes of German extreme right-wing thinking for half a century by the time Hitler penned Mein Kampf. Roger Ewell writes, Hitler was fond of posing for photographs, staring at Nietzsche's bust, and he frequently visited the Nietzsche Museum in Weimar, where the mad philosopher died in 1900. This actually perhaps tells us more about Hitler than it does about Nietzsche. The sister of Nietzsche, Elizabeth, and her husband, the anti-Semite Bernhard Forster, had set up a kind of like an Aryan colony in Paraguay during the 1880s called Nueva Germania. And this turned out to be a sort of Apocalypse Now stroke kind of Fitzcarraldo type hell where with malaria and madness. And Forster himself actually drank himself to death when he was there. His Elizabeth Nietzsche returned to Germany in the 1880s and 1890s and took control of the affairs of her brother, whose mental health was in severe decline because of his infection with syphilis. And before he died, she set about transforming his legacy into that of nationalism and anti-Semitism.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Now, there's precious little in Nietzsche's works that really are focused on, that really can be interpreted as anti-Semitic. However, as we've seen with Marx, and I did a podcast, I must have been last year now, on the way in which Marx was interpreted by those who gained direct access to his works after he died. There are many different Nietzsches, and there are many different Marxes, depending on who is articulating what they believe to be their legacy. Elizabeth Nietzsche really captured her brother's work for nationalism and anti-Semitism. Now, this would, of course, have been appealing to Hitler many years later, but there were other attractions to Nietzsche, partly that of Nietzsche being a kind of a complex, contrary, and difficult thinker, hard to engage with. Hitler himself, and a kind of like an avowed anti-intellectual, what he tended to mean when he referred to himself as an anti-intellectual was he was opposed to certain kinds of intellectualism. But there were certain ideas that he thought were rather attractive. He saw advantages of exploiting the authority of people who were perceived as great thinkers. It was more the certain type of intellectual that Hitler condemned. Hitler despised the rationalistic, optimistic believer in the perfectibility of people and human progress. He despised the Enlightenment intellectual. And Nietzsche, as Hitler understood him, to be an anti-Enlightenment intellectual, someone that did not believe in this upward trajectory towards the sunlit uplands of rationality, technology, and rights for all, as kind of realised through this kind of journey. Hitler believed in struggle and in racial struggle. And he saw that Enlightenment thought encapsulated mainly in liberalism and Marxism. In Nietzsche's final work, Ecce Homo, in 1888, he prophesied, "One day there will be associated with my name the recollection of something frightful, or a crisis like no other before on earth. I am not a man, I am dynamite." Roger Eatwell writes, "It's all too easy when studying the origins of fascism to accept Nietzsche's implied connection between ideas and events, without realising that the relationship between thought and practice is elusive. The crucial fact is underlined by the fact that it is far from clear whether Nietzsche would have supported the fascist movements which emerged after 1919. One of the reasons for this, and it's very easy to say, but, you know, we can hypothesise, is that the, you know, what Marx would have called the lumpen proletariat, the thugs of the working class, the uneducated type cannon fodder of the Second Empire, the Kaiserreich, who would later make up Hitler's brown shirts. Nietzsche would have had very little time for them, and he would have had very little time for the anti-intellectualism, the celebration of book-burning ignorance of Nazism. Many commentators have stressed that Nietzsche was a critic of German nationalism. He was a critic of biological theories of race. But there is kind of a lot of scholarship that, again, challenges this too. Nietzsche's critique of German nationalism was basically twofold. He believed that it was diverting attention from more general European problems, especially the rise of decadence. So Nietzsche looked at Europe as being one civilization, and he thought that the problem of the urban poor being, and the sick and the weak being a drain on society's resources was far more important than whether Germany was in a dispute with France or Russia. And he saw he thought in terms of civilizations going into decline as opposed to individual nation states at odds with one another. Secondly, and related to this point, Nietzsche believed that modern German culture was too materialist and what he thought of as being too Philistine. In defence of the idea that Nietzsche was a racial thinker, he viewed the problem of decadence in Europe as being one where more virile races, more martial races, ones where the population growth rate was higher, where the people seemed to be more warlike, more tribal, more angry, more expansive, and more able to fight, struggle and win than Europeans. He viewed that as being one of the fundamental problems facing Europe. And that has to rely on a number of racial assumptions about seemingly more virile peoples. And it was part of a kind of a broader culture of articulating racial anxieties in Europe at the end of the 19th century, at the end of a century of rapid imperial expansion. However, Nietzsche was far from being alone in any of these views. These were not considered at the time out of step with the broad sweep of bourgeois sentiment in most European countries. The idea that racial thinking was somehow aberrant or strange or wrong or immoral, that's really a product of the 20th century, and it's really a product of the post-Second World War era, whereas in the 1890s, talking about hierarchies of race, taxonomies of race, there being certain races at the top, in the middle and at the bottom, this seemed to make a perfect sense to most European imperialists, because they appeared to have witnessed evidence of this with their own eyes, and there didn't seem to be anything particularly wrong with the idea that white Europeans were born to rule the world. Most popular anxieties came from the question of, well, how long will this persist for? And how long will history now favour white Europeans and keep them in their hallowed position of imperial masters? And this was some of the things that Nietzsche was believed he was addressing through his theories of decadence. Perhaps one place where fascist thinking and Nietzschean thought part is the idea of the possibilities of radical change. Fascism is about dynamism. Fascism is about constant action. Fascism is about less thought, less talk, and more do. Fascism is about the inspired leader taking the masses, taking their following in a particular direction and using willpower and mastery of the will in order to achieve anything. Nietzsche had a more pessimistic view of the possibility of change. He wasn't certain that simply divine inspiration and willpower would really overcome the obstacles that Western society faced. So fascism is a political programme that in part draws on the writings of Nietzsche. Nietzsche's own philosophy, as I said earlier, a kind of expansive, far-reaching, complex and hard to interpret in many ways. The use that the Nazis and the Italian fascists made of Nietzsche was quite narrow. They cherry-picked aspects of his thinking and applied it to a political programme. And this is what political leaders of all shades do the world over. They find philosophical doctrines and really bend them into their own usage. It's not to suggest that Nietzsche's doctrines are either benign or malevolent. They are simply what they are, his observations on the societies, the individual, and the future of European civilization, and the problem that Christianity, humanism, and socialism, in his view, had created for the heroic individual. Hitler saw this and believed these ideas, and really did marry these ideas in with anti-Semitism and nationalism, with the help from Nietzsche's sister Elizabeth, who had already begun to capture her brother's work for this end. Okay, so in the next podcast on the origins of fascism, we're going to look at the development of fascism after the First World War. And I will catch you then. So thanks very much for listening. And always remember, if you are able to donate to the Explaining History Patreon page, all contributions gratefully accepted, and we do survive on a tiny trickle of ad revenue and the generosity of our patrons. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.